Good evening. I'd like to call the November 7th, 2013 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature to order. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Roll call of members.
Mr. Robinson.
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa.
Here.
Mr. Stein. Mr. Burbank.
Here.
Ms. Chalk.
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis.
Here.
Ms. Herrera.
Here.
Ms. Kiefer. Mr. Lane.
Here.
Ms. McAsey.
Present.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne.
Present.
Mr. McKenna.
Here.
Mr. Proto.
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
13 members present.
And Ms. Kiefer?
14 members present.
Thank you. Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
I think we will reorder the business when so that we'll do the budget and capital resolution before all the other committee reports. Okay, Jim?
Thank you, yes.
All right. I have a number of people signed up from the public to speak. You can pick your mic, either one of those mics. You'll have 3 minutes to speak, and Kathy Covert over here will help you keep track of the time. If anybody else wants to speak after we've gone through the list, you can just join us, go up to the microphone, and tell us your name and where you live, and have your 3 minutes.
Kathy. Point of information. If the budget report is going to be given, that doesn't mean we're going to vote on the budget resolutions that are going to be dealt with in the public hearing, right? At that time.
I only have one resolution, and if Martha is suggesting that we move that up, that's the one that we would be voting on.
It's just to set the public hearing.
Setting the public hearing.
Just wanted to make that clear as a point of information and have that be in the minutes.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right. I have Jim Johnston first and then Joanne Cipolla Dennis. Jim?
Thank you. Good evening. My name is James Johnston. I live in Bradford County, Pennsylvania. I'm associated with the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. We represent the employees working at Beechtree Center for Nursing. We're very concerned with the transfer of the property and the facility. We really hope that the legislators can keep in mind that the employees there are struggling to try to make a living. I did report on Tuesday night here that we are in negotiations and we are continuing negotiations, although I did fail to say that from minute one, the new employer implemented reductions in wages, hours, and working conditions and made it even tougher for these employees to survive. So we ask that you keep that in mind, that the employees' interest in mind as you make your decisions going forward. Any help that we could get in trying to ensure the wages and hours and working conditions for these employees would certainly be appreciated. I did ask a group of them to come tonight. They're a little reluctant. They're a little afraid of any retaliations. They did not want to come. They did sign, over 50 of them signed a petition asking the same thing for consideration be given to their wages. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you. Did you want to leave the petition with us?
I will.
Okay. Thank you. Joanne Cipolla Dennis and then Deborah Cipolla Dennis.
I'm still short, so I need a little adjustment, I guess. Good evening, and thank you for your public service. Those of you who were reelected or elected, congratulations to you. Those who were not, I'm very sorry, and thank you for many, many years of service to this community. We could use you in other areas, believe me. So tonight I'm going to speak about something that I haven't spoken about in public before. I reside in Dryden, and something that most people don't know about me is I used to work for the prison system in the state of Florida. I used to be a CO for the prison system in Florida for some of the worst juvenile criminals from gangs primarily. Jail is a very, very unpleasant place to be, especially if you have not been yet convicted of a crime and you're awaiting trial and your bail is so set so as though you cannot afford it. So you spend time in jail, which could be months before you actually get to trial. And many trials result in actually not a conviction at all. So we have some problems here on our own in Tompkins County. We have stop and frisk rules. We have racism. We have oppression that we must address. And it concerns me about an expansion that seems to be kind of no questions asked type of things. And I don't say that to be flip. I say that because it seems that we really need to ask questions about why things are needing to be done. And if they're not needed, why should we go ahead and do them to begin with? And I'm concerned because I'm seeing things like this happen. So I wanted to bring it to your attention. And I wanted to talk about responsibility. Thank you. Responsibility. We have a responsibility to people in this community who have lesser of a voice than maybe more affluent people do. And we need to stand up and say, you know what? What's going on here needs to change. We need to change the mentality of how we look at things. And we need to change the mentality of jailing people who may not be guilty of any crime until they're sentenced to a crime they may not have even committed. And that costs us a lot of money. Not only does it cost us money, it is of ill moral compass to do that to a human being. People in jail need to be there only if they are convicted of a serious, heinous crime against others. To have somebody committed to a jail to await trial who has been arrested for shoplifting is really despicable. And I want to see our police officers not do that. I want to see our police officers rise to a higher level, and I would like to see our judges spend a little bit more time and a lot more compassion with the public. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Deborah Cipolla Dennis, then Paula Jonice? Jonide?
A quote.
Paula will know who she is. Deborah.
Okay. Yes, my name is Deborah Cipolla Dennis, and I'm from Freeville. And I'm just going to expand a little bit on some of the things that Joanne said. I come here tonight with a message of hope, a hope that we might be able to change the way that we think and act, resulting in change in our culture. We have an opportunity in this place, Tompkins County, and in this time of 2013 to set an example for New York State and even the country as a whole. The change that I'm talking about is changing the way that we approach activities that are thought of as outside of the law and the treatment of people that are accused of those activities. Most of these activities are nonviolent and victimless. Do we really want to put these people in jail? I'm not saying that behavior such as drug use or intoxication should not be corrected, but is jail really the right option here? Jail is expensive. It's dangerous for both the incarcerated person and for security personnel. It dehumanizes people and creates a culture of inferiority and continued lawlessness. It does nothing to correct the behavior. Many times the behaviors that get people into a situation where they become incarcerated are caused by addiction or mental health issues, and sometimes they're caused by surely being poor and poverty. These go completely untreated or unaddressed in jail and tend to actually make the problems worse for everyone involved. The dramatic increase in the number of people being incarcerated, even though crime rates are decreasing, doesn't really make sense to me. It appears to me that judges are using jail as a first resort instead of a last resort. This takes parents away from children and causes people to lose their jobs. These consequences cause further drain on our government systems, such as foster care, food stamps, and subsidized housing. Again, this is expensive. I challenge you, our county legislature, to consider alternatives to expanding the prison industrial complex that feeds the feeds taxpayer dollars to corporations and harms the fabric of our communities.
One more minute.
I am most concerned about the unequal treatment with regard to people of color, specifically black male teens and adults. They are suspected, arrested, and prosecuted at a higher rate than Caucasian people. This type of racist behavior exhibited by our police and sheriff's department is unacceptable and should not be tolerated. It has caused an entire community of people to feel inferior and unequal. We are losing out because of this. Instead of having the benefit of engagement from our entire population, we have marginalized them. When this happens, our society loses. Additionally, when young people are arrested, it's harder for them to find employment, and so they find limited opportunity for growth. This pushes them back to a life of crime, and it's much easier for them to go into that instead of looking for ways to go into...
Finish up, please.
Yep. We are known for being progressive here, so let's truly be progressive on this issue. I'd be happy to work with any or all of you on it.
Thank you, Deborah. Paula, and then Natalie Nesvedrani.
I'm Paula Ioannidou. I'm a professor at Ithaca College and part of the STOP, the Tompkins Jail Expansion Coalition that is slowly building in this community. In case you're wondering why we are all here today after you have already passed the resolution to expand the county jail, it is because we had no time to organize and no time to even respond and no time to do anything about this issue through formal processes. So now we're here to just say that we disrupt the logic of this expansion, which passed with such quickness and such swiftness. I want to speak to your hearts, hopefully, to pierce your hearts, to actually say that every single time that we put more money as a government into jail expansions, into state expansions of jails, we're endorsing two things. One, more and more of our money goes towards things that I call death economies, economies that only disrupt people's lives, break people's families up, get them into further entrenched into poverty, and perpetuate a system of racism that has been so unequivocally demonstrated through so much research. I have done 10 years of research on this issue, and I'm happy to give you books upon books upon books that substantiate that viewpoint. If that moral argument of the fact that each time as a legislature we endorse county funds, public funds, our money towards these death economies, if that doesn't speak to you, then perhaps statistical research and studies that have shown that every single time we expand jails and more policing as a response to the massive problems that we face in our counties, perhaps the moneyed aspect of it will speak to you. And that has shown that increasingly the state is displacing costs for these jails expansions onto counties and therefore onto property taxpayers that eventually will have to foot the cost. We have submitted several questions to you that we expect answers for. The argument that $244,000 will be saved by the county for boarding out prisoners does not address the long-term costs of the interest rates. We don't understand how this project is being funded, what kind of bonds and what interest is going to be paid over the long term for this capital project. No one has talked to us about alternatives to incarceration. For example, OAR's bail program that could have been given $900,000 to reduce that inmate to what you needed it to be below the threshold that is supposedly mandating the seven-bed expansion. No one has explained to us why the State Commissions of Corrections, who has said nothing as far as I'm concerned to the sheriff about this, but we are supposedly having to show progress to them. I don't understand why we have to show progress when no one has demanded that we show that progress. And when public schools, affordable housing, infrastructure, public transportation in this county and in this city are radically facing budget cuts and constantly scraping about to make ends meet. So I'm questioning the logic of substantiating and using public monies towards death economies that only destroy people's lives and that do not, and I repeat, do not correlate to crime statistics, according to the government's own statistics and the county's own statistics. So if there's no correlation between crime and incarceration, then there must be other reasons why we're incarcerating people, having to do with feeding and widening a death economy of the prison system, making that infrastructure bigger and bigger and bigger, while our social services and our social goods and our public goods are shrinking every single day.
Thank you. Natalie Nesvadarani. And she's the last one signed up, but anybody else who would like to address? Okay, Stanley, send your sheet up. And anybody else? Good, we got more sheets. Okay. Natalie?
Hi there, how are you? I heard that Ithaca was the most intelligent city.
Please state your name. And
I'm Natalie.
And your last name?
Nesvadarani.
And where you live?
I'm living here. I'm living in Fall Creek.
Very simple.
Okay. Thank you.
But jail expansion is quite stupid, as Paula just covered very nicely for us. Policing and incarceration have no correlation with crime, and if this is news to anyone, we would be happy to provide you with a bit more literature on that. The logic of expansion usually relates to overcrowding, and although the discussion has been incredibly limited, with regards to Ithaca's jail expansion, it seems that it is also based on some overcrowding issue. This is a problem that has been created in almost every context where there has been a jail expansion, and in all of those places, those beds have been filled, and they will be filled, and it will have no correlation with crime. It's harming all of us. It's harming our communities. It's a completely unintelligent use of our very limited funds. And I would like to see us be that intelligent city. I'm from California, and I've seen your future. My state is covered with prisons that have been constructed and have gone into complete disuse for various reasons, because after being constructed, they have been deemed too remote, perhaps, or they have there has been some architectural oversight that violates emergency code or whatever. That, I think, highlights the industries that benefit from jail expansions such as this. And those include law enforcement, for instance. That includes services, service providers associated with jails and prisons. That includes construction industries. The people who do not benefit are us. Everyone who's in this room participating in this discussion, everyone who is contributing their money, their time, their effort, everyone who's trying to create a better community. I would like to see us invest in strengthening our communities and providing programs in a million different things. This is the last place our funds should go, especially in this time of scarcity. As I hear, there's cuts every which direction. The most vital resources are just dropping off the map. And I would also like it if at some point in this meeting someone could respond to the point that Paula rose about the seemingly unprecedentedly rapid passage of this expansion. Please educate us on what the policy is for public input. That's my main question. Please tell us more about that, and we'll provide you with some literature from our end as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Dan Sinekin, and then Carl Gelderluge.
It's Gelderluge.
What?
Gelderluge.
Gelderluge.
I'm Dan Sinekin.
Okay.
And I live on Sears Street, just half a block away. And I teach a course, a Cornell course, at Auburn Correctional Facility, up the state, and I'm here to stand with the coalition to end the Tompkins County's jail expansion. I understand that this has been an issue for a long time, that Tompkins County has been responding to the federal bureaucracy who has been trying to shift its expenses onto counties for incarcerating populations from prisons to county jails, and that there has been a history of resistance in Tompkins County to this expansion. And I think it's too bad that the capitulation is happening now. I know that this legislature has voted against jail expansion in the past. So I wonder why now it has chosen the time to expand. As I hope many of you know, jail expansion and incarceration here fits into a much larger and longer systematic expansion of incarceration in the United States that radically expanded beginning in the 1970s. New York has the proud place of instituting the Rockefeller drug laws, which were one of the major reasons why mass incarceration began to increase radically across the country. Our prison population has increased multiple times over in this country since 1970, and we have now the largest incarcerated population in the history of the world. So it seems like, if you want to learn more, I suggest one great place to start would be Michelle Alexander's book, The New Jim Crow, which has been involved in a growing national awareness and opposition to mass incarceration. She argues quite clearly and convincingly about how this mass incarceration involves systematic racism, with especially young black men being disproportionately incarcerated.
One more minute.
So given the situation in which jail expansion and incarceration is happening here, given its role in mass incarceration across the country, in systematic racism, I wonder why we want to be here in Tompkins County part of this racist system rather than resisting against it. Thanks.
Thank you, Carl Gelderloos. I hope I got that right. And then Stanley McPherson.
Hi, my name is Carl Gelderloos. That's how it works. All right, cool. I've been a resident of Tompkins County for about the past decade, mostly in Ithaca, but in Lansing. At the moment, I live just around the corner on Buffalo Street. And I want to join the others who've spoken before me in voicing my opposition to what seems like a fait accompli of the jail expansion. I mean, there's little I can add to what they've already said. I do want to reiterate that as far as the human community here goes, it's a total disaster. There are better ways to reduce the jail population. There are better ways to make sure people are – to deal with social harm, basically. There's a rich literature on this. Again, we can point you in the direction of that. A study by Dana Kaplan from several years ago that featured Tompkins County actually as a case study of rejecting the state-mandated jail expansion pointed to several ways to alleviate the jail population without jail expansion. One thing that hasn't been mentioned yet is the high percentage of people with mental health problems in the jail system. Studies have shown conclusively that people arrested for the same infraction by the police with mental health issues are locked up at a significantly higher rate than those not suffering from mental health issues. I mean, this is just one facet of a much larger trend where we take money from human services and social services and health services like healthcare, education, after-school programs, that sort of thing, and move them towards the prison state, essentially. I mean, there's not much of another way to put it. And this is sort of a self-perpetuating cycle. The more we do this, the more it happens. Thank you. Even aside from all that, aside from the ethical questions, which are many, economically it's a disaster. I'm sure you all know that the multiplier effect for jails and incarceration is way lower than any other type of spending, including education, culture, et cetera. It's been shown, contrary to the popular belief, that jail expansion is a way to boost economies, that it actually impedes economies, especially in upstate regions like ours. I also want to ask why this was passed and how. I'd be very curious how it seems to have circumvented the democratic process. So I'll just add my voice to that question. It seems highly problematic, to say the least. It's way cheaper, has been shown, way cheaper and way easier to stop a jail expansion from happening than to dismantle something that's already been done. It's much more financially sound, makes much more sense in human terms. You know, we'd prefer to stop this before it happens. But, I mean, you know, I have the sense that as a society, one way or another, we'll have our Bastille Day, as it were. I mean, the jails have to go. So it would make a lot more sense to stop this one before it's even built. Thank you.
Thank you. Stanley McPherson and then Josephine Cardamone.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to turn the page from what was spoken about, and I think you should know about what's been happening far as the living wage is concerned. It has been repercussions, and I'm going to pass something out to each and every one of y'all. I have spoken to a special advisor of mine, and this need to go public, and it will go public tonight. The living wage, which was $100,000 that went into the next year contingency fund, the vote was 10 to 5. My superiors did not like that, and they took action and terminated me based on that. And so my living wage continues. And I thank this committee here, this legislature, for that 10 to 5 vote for next year's putting living wage money in that budget. Now, what I am saying is that the company is, they are disagreeing to paying living wage. And so they took action, and now a response is going to come about.
1 minute, please.
So what I am saying is that they can reinstate me based on people, the legislator here, and other organizations which will come forward. But I am saying to you that it need to be brought forward. You need to know, because living wage is much needed. And not just me, but they can try it on Milton next. And so this is why I'm here tonight, to stop it, because we're not going to let them have the power that they want on firing people because of people asking for living wage. Okay, so I will pass this out. I have 20 copies. I will pass it out to you tonight so you can read it. It's not anything detrimental. It's saying reinstate me. And it's saying I have your support as a worker here, you know, at the recycling center. And I do a great job. I save people's lives every day. And so I want to be reinstated, and I want to save more people's lives. Even though the living wage ain't come yet, I'm still saving people's lives. And that's what I'm here tonight to ask for. Thank you very much.
Josephine Cardamone, and then M. Hendricks.
So I'm Josephine Cardamone. I've lived in Ithaca about 35 years. I was a member of the group that originally tried to question the expansion of the county jail about, I think, around 15 years ago, and then again 10 years ago. So I understand all the complications, the variances, the State Commission of Corrections, and I understand that you folks feel like you've done the lesser of two evils and made a compromise so we don't have to build a bigger jail. But I have to question, why don't we consider lowering the jail population? I mean, there are communities across this country that have kept their jail populations very low. And they do that by supporting families and individuals and taking a positive approach, not a punitive approach, to the social problems. And guess what? Those communities that keep their jail population low are safer. And they have a lot of money to spend on great programs to make the community even better. So why don't we strengthen our community? I'm not even sure, like, how to talk about it, because it's been so long that we've been saying putting people in jail isn't doing any good for our community. Really, it's not. And if people need more information about these communities that keep their jail population low, I'm very happy to go out and do a lot of research to show how they do it. Because in this, you know, progressive, enlightened community, I'm not sure why we can't manage it. Thanks.
Thank you. M. Hendrich and then Claire Grady.
My name is Hendricks. I live in Trumansburg on McLellan Road. And as you see, I'm part of the Stop the Jail Expansion Coalition. And I can imagine that you're maybe wondering, oh, gosh, there again, there are all these people wanting to make comments, and we have to stay here another half hour longer, perhaps. And, maybe you wish we were here during the summer when you were actually considering this, and you were looking in your heart like, okay, why do we have to agree? Why do we vote for it? Because that's what I'm wondering. I'm looking at all of you, and so I know every one of you except Nate Shinagawa, who happened to be not present, I believe, you all voted for it. And I wonder, what was going on in your head? And actually, that's something I guess I will ask each and every one of you if we ever meet in person. What were you thinking? Were you waiting for the community to come and organize a movement? Well, we're here. And I think we will come back, and we will come back, and we will come back until you've explored all the alternatives. And I think we will convince you in the end that the alternatives are better. And I'm just going to cite now two examples. This, as the scuttlebutt, I heard it through the scuttlebutt, and I know Leslie McBean knows about it also. This one of the judges sent someone to jail supposedly to get a shower. And people felt very frustrated at OAR, that they said, do we have to waste our time on this sort of incident? So maybe that is the road we need to go. We need to kind of take a closer look at why are people sent to jail. And you can help us do that by encouraging the Sheriff's Department to give very detailed statistics and to make them available to us so that we can go and talk to the magistrates and judges who, according to the scuttlebutt, always set their bail just high enough so that OAR can't intervene. So if you would work with us on getting the correct data and talking to the people that we need to talk to, we can, for free, reduce your jail population. My understanding is you have 75 official beds, and you have like an average of 96 prisoners, and you need to board them out. So you have an extra of 21 prisoners, and you're looking for a way to save money. And so we propose to help you come up with a strategy to bring that number down to 76, and then we can get back to business instead of keeping on talking about this jail expansion. Thank you.
Thank you. Claire Grady is the last one signed up.
Hi. I know most of you, but some I don't. Hello. I'm here also to join the voices for resisting jail expansion. And I want to thank legislators and community members who have worked over the last 15 years to resist jail expansion. And here we are again. So the last decision, or the legislative body decided to go for this last jail expansion, it happened very quickly. I know some of us had just read about it happening or going to possibly happen, and the next thing we knew, it was passed. And so I would suggest that the speed that in which that happened, at least some of us felt like it wasn't something we were discussing in the papers, and that we were given time to launch a community input, more significant community input. So why are we here? Because the logic that continues for jail expansion is still with us. And we do understand that there are these mandates. And Kathy, you say it's a complicated matter. And yet we hear from a lot of community members that have some creative ideas. I think we'd like to see us work together. So my remarks are not just to legislators, it's to community members, because this is a collective conversation. It's not just up to our legislators as to how this goes. And in that vein, I'd like to just tack on to Josephine, who said reduce the number of people in the jail. It probably has been said already, but I want to say it again and again. I understand that over 50% of the people in the jail are pre-trial. That bail has been set, and Jamie just said, beyond the amount that OAR can give them bail fund. So there's just a few very obvious places where we can tweak it. I'd like to add a piece to this conversation that's typically left out, and it's about crime, and it's about safety. And I'd like to, as someone who has resisted the war, endless war in this country, I have sat in our prisons and jails for quite some time, federal and county, and I have considered the matter about crime and who is in jail and who's not. And I would suggest that mass killing to the tune of millions and grand theft to the tune of trillions is the big crime. That we let that go unaccounted for every day, and to the extent that we let that go unaccounted for, we find ourselves targeting people who are the victims of systemic crime and racism, and that's who fills our jails. I think we need to say that again and again. Okay? I don't take it lightly that people that are in, that there's real issues that people are dealing with where somebody is in a fight with somebody, or somebody has taken a car, or taken, that's something that needs to be addressed.
Please finish up.
So, did I reach the limit?
Yeah, but just
okay.
Finish up.
So sorry, I thought I got a 1 minute time.
Oh, I thought you saw the card.
I'm so sorry.
All right.
I missed it. So we spend $720 million a day in the business of killing. And so I'd like to just encourage us to turn away from that culture of fear that supports economies of death, and that it's a collective effort and not just one of the legislators. Thank you.
Thank you. Kayla. I've got Kayla Young and then Caleb Thomas.
Hi, I'm really short. My name is Kayla Young. I live South Hill. I'm from New York City. And I kind of want to talk about the mental illness that comes from the prison industrial complex, but not focus on the prisoners. I actually want to focus on actually the officers, because I come from a family who's been on both sides of the law. A good family friend of mine's, is actually one of the officers that killed Sean Bell in Queens. And it's so funny because people think, like, in the prisons and in the jails that only the prisoners suffer, you know, as if the COs and the cooks and, you know, as if they don't suffer as well. And you can actually see it in the way officers walk down the street, and the way even retired officers, how it carries on with them, and you see it in their children, how they hold this, like, sickness in. And my whole thing is, it's, like, the whole expanding, like, the jails, it's, like, really hurting ourselves, you know, really, like, hurting our children. And because I know, like, I have, like, experience of dealing with family members who, you know, yeah, you receive this big paycheck, you're working in the prisons and everything, but then, like, you're leaving with that aggression, that anger. And it's not just, you know, the inmates who are suffering, and it's actually everyone is suffering. And I just want to know, like, why aren't we shifting, you know, because as much as an officer would try to remain uptight, you know, that's holding, they're holding in all that aggression and all that, like, pain, and then passing it on to their children, you know. So I just want to know, like, you know, have this dialogue with some of you guys afterwards, and, like, days leading on. I'll leave you guys my email.
1 minute.
But just really want to know, how could we stop this whole mental illness that's actually, that we're creating and festering in by expanding this prison. So,
Caleb Thomas.
Hello. My name is Caleb Thomas. I live on South Cayuga Street. And speaking to you tonight, right there. Is that better?
Yeah.
All right, great. Again, about who's in jail, who's in prisons, and who's not, and who are the criminals, and who's not. And for me, what we've got going on here is we've got this, what we're addressing here is these symptoms. We've got a drug economy that's going, and that's a symptom of an economy that's been corrupted by criminals. And just so it's, you know, we're fighting with each other, you know, we're doing drugs to get by, we're selling drugs to get by, we're doing what we can to make ends meet. And so what does that mean, you know? And then, you know, where the who's the police officers and who's not, and who are our school teachers and who isn't, who's getting the jobs, who owns the commons, the banks, you know, it's you know, the health system. These are all creating a world that's pretty harsh for people today. And so what we're talking about is whether to jail people or not. And so what I'm asking is for people to put themselves in that position, you know, of not having access. So that idea of, you know, what would it be like to not have access to resources and friends? And that's all. Just, yeah, put yourself in the shoes of, you know, what would it be like to have an arrest on your record? And that would be harder to get jobs. Put yourself in the... You know, that means, you know, the food stamps and that spiral. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to address the legislature? You've got 3 minutes.
Good evening. Well, but I have to say it doesn't take 3 minutes. Good evening. My name is Jabron Haygood, and I was born and raised here in Ithaca. And I don't know too much about the how all of this works as far as legislation getting an expansion in jail. But I know this, is that I like to know, why are you even expanding a jail? And what are the people in jail for? Is it like smoking a joint in the commons? Taking a pee by the tree? Is that what we're building these jails for petty crimes? I mean, I think a few people in the coalition have mentioned that too, is why was this passed so quickly and not, the public didn't have a chance at all to sit down like they're doing right now to stop it. And I would say to each and every one of you who will get elected that I will hold you accountable for it. I certainly will the next time an election comes up, because I think the public has the right to voice their opinion before anything gets passed. And that's pretty much all I want to say.
Thank you. Anyone else? Before we move to the next part of the agenda, I wanted to say we, which is municipal officials, and then legislators will have a turn to speak on any issue. We don't have anything on the agenda. There's no vote. There's no formal item of discussion tonight on this issue. I expect you'll hear some comments from legislators as we go around the room, and your comments are certainly being heard. I will have something to add at the end after after legislators have a chance as part of my report. But again, after we have a turn, people have a turn speaking. There's nothing on the agenda here tonight. Although, you know, we'll welcome your comments. So first, are there any? Yeah.
We will be voting on setting the public hearing for the budget, which includes a capital program, which is what the jail expansion is right at this moment. It's included in our capital program. No, Kathy's telling me no. So somebody needs to clarify that for me.
Yeah, we've already set that public hearing, which is, help us, November 12th?
November 12th at 7 p.m.
Right.
Here.
So we're going to have a public hearing tonight. What is it about?
The Beech Tree. Are we voting to set the hearing for Beech Tree?
Got it.
Okay. The budget, the hearing on the budget is November 12th, 7 o'clock here, and this jail project is part of that. Are there any municipal officials in the room? I'm not sure if I can see everybody. Any elected officials who'd like to address us? All right. Legislative privilege. I had Jim, Brian, Kathy, Luce, and Peter. Frank.
Thank you, Martha. I am going to completely change the discussion. I am this evening talking about the Super Bowl for the Family Reading Partnership, which will be held this Saturday at Boynton Middle School from 10 to 4. The book this year is Kevin Hanks' book, and it's Arthur's Way, I think, is the name of it. And the theme of, interestingly enough, the theme of the Family Reading Partnership event on Saturday is friendship. And if you drive by the Ithaca High School tennis court, you will see 10 words that have to do with friendship. So what I'm here talking about is please attend this event. We have roughly 2,000 people who show up every year for the last 15 years. We will have celebrity readers there reading stories to children. And it is a premier event that the Family Reading Partnership puts on. And it's all free. So thank you for listening.
Thank you, Jim. Brian.
Thanks, Martha. And I'll go ahead and switch it back to the matter in which most folks are here. First off, let me say, and hopefully this isn't falling on deaf ears, but Tompkins County is very well known as far as its commitment to alternatives to incarceration programs. I would venture a guess that that we could find some data to show that per capita, I would say we would spend much more than most, if not all, counties in New York State just for that. A little bit of evidence of that is another capital project that we just recently approved, and that is our day reporting program, which was housed in the old library, and the leaks in the roof finally got to everyone, and we went ahead and we were spending $1.5 million to attach it to Department of Social Services building and get that program closer to some of the services that a lot of those folks need, and closer to probation and so on and so forth. So I hope everyone can appreciate that. Flipping to the what's referred to as jail expansion, I hope that everyone knows that when we discussed the business case, if you will, for that project, we don't hold the cards, and a lot of our options are not within our control. The State Department of Corrections tells us, based on demographics and so forth, what they believe the capacity of our county jail should be. We are currently way below that. The last number I recall hearing was they wanted a capacity of, well, it started out at like 150 or 40 or something like that. That's been whittled down to an agreement of 111. Right now we have space, and that's what determines your capacity, is so much square feet per inmate or resident or, you know, whatever you'd like to call them. And that's at 72. So we have been operating for many years on variances from the State Department of Corrections.
even with those variances, and let me back up a little bit. All along the way, the Department of Corrections has said, look it, we hear what you're saying because we don't want to build a bigger jail. We hear what you're saying, but we have got to see some movement. And like I said, this has been going on for many years. The county has spent literally millions of dollars boarding out inmates, which doesn't serve anyone. It was actually the staff. So let's move ahead to the present. It was actually the staff that started to do an assessment of their own building and determined that there was a recreation room within one of the pods in the jail that was seldom used at all. It was basically wasted space for the most part. The way that room is set up, it can actually be used, and that's what's in the proposal, can actually be used for kind of a mini dormitory style area of seven for what's being referred to as an expansion. You have to provide an area of recreation for everyone, so a much bigger area of recreation is being constructed outside the building. So the building itself is not being expanded. Outside the building, the recreation part of it is being constructed out there, and again, it's much larger. There is not going to be, because of where that room is situated, there is not going to be a need to hire more staff. The staff that's currently working has the ability to see that area as well as three others that are currently there. So we are not spending additional monies on that. Our data has shown that we are boarding out, even with the variances, we are boarding out an average of 6 to 8 prisoners per day. And again, that doesn't serve anyone. We don't, first off, it's costly. You know, I'm sure you folks have heard that if you add up those costs of, you know, the average of 6 and 8 is 7, which happens to be the exact number of that room. So if with that savings of not having to send those folks out, the cost of this expansion will be taken care of in about 4 years, 4 to 5 years. There's also an added benefit for keeping these folks in-house, because we want them here in Tompkins County where they can get the services that they probably aren't going to get at another county, because remember, we provide much more in the way of services and alternatives and just programs in general than the average county would. Not to mention, we don't want them away from their families. You know, we want them here so that they can have visitation, they can meet with their attorneys, they can do all of that. So that was the business case for the project. So in my eyes, it's not an expansion. It's simply using the space that we have and keeping those folks here rather than housing them out, because they would be going, you know, with that number, they would either have to go to another facility and be transported back and forth. This way, we can keep them here. I think everybody knows that we here do not have control as to the amount of people that, get remanded to the county jail. You know, ultimately that would fall on judges, and, I heard a bunch of people mention that. I will also mention that, in just in case you're not aware, there is a very large committee. It's called CJATI, Criminal Justice Alternatives to Incarceration Committee, that's made up of judges, OAR, there's police representation, the district attorney.
Probation.
There's every player or organization that you can imagine that has a hand in trying to keep the population of the jail down is there. It would be my suggestion that a lot of your concerns, aside from this expansion, sound to me like they're more directed towards that and the systemic things that are going on that cause the people to get sent there in the first place. Again, we don't have the control over how many. The only thing we have is they're there, now take care of them somehow. Hang on just a sec. Someone mentioned the mental health component. Very, very valid point. What's going on in the state and probably in the country is egregious. It is. Right now, today, I guarantee you that there are folks sitting up in our jail that really shouldn't be there because of mental health issues. There's no place else currently to put them. And as we all probably know, things are afoot to make that situation even worse. And we all have to do whatever it is we can to make sure that that doesn't occur. I was listening to everybody, and I've got notes all over the place here, so I'm sorry. You know, I am the chair of the Public Safety Committee, and we brought this forward on behalf of the entire legislature and members of the sheriff's office. We were not looking to put more people in jail. We were simply looking for a way to house the people that we do have in a bit of a more not only fiscally sound way, but really in a more moral way, and that is keep them here. These are our folks. They don't need to be sent to, you know, an hour away. If we can keep them here, we want to keep them here. That has nothing to do with the overall population of the jail. As far as future true expansion, that's certainly something that all of us would need to talk about, because I don't think anybody would want to do that. There again, we're answerable not only to ourselves, but unfortunately to folks from the state. And at that time, I think you would get some real opposition, and rightfully so. I would be open, if necessary. Hopefully what I've said makes things somewhat clearer to some people. I'd hate to think I just wasted 10 minutes of everybody's time saying these sorts of things. But, yes, we did act upon a recommendation. It was approved unanimously by the folks around the room. There really was a very good case to do this. We, you know, because of circumstances in this meeting, we're not able to do a true dialogue But I would certainly, and I'm sure others, folks from the sheriff's office, even, you know, maybe even a panel from CJATI would be willing to meet with whoever if you want even more information. And I guess I'll just leave it at that. Joe, do you have anything to add? Or
no, I think I had notes as well, and you've covered my notes and more and better. I guess the only other thing that I would offer is if anybody would like to see what we do with respect to alternatives, because it's an easy thing to talk about, it's a hard thing to do. If you'd like to see what we do, it's on our webpage. We list all of our programs. We call it program assessments. And if you go to the probation page, you will find the litany of alternative to incarceration programs we do and the investment that we make in those programs. So I would encourage you to do that. Otherwise, Brian, I think you've captured it.
I'm afraid it's not time for dialogue back and forth. So I've got Kathy Luce, Peter Frank, Pam Dooley. Okay,
I've got a couple of things. I'm going to start out with some good news. Many of y'all probably know, and maybe some of you haven't heard, but INDA passed the Senate today. That's the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. For many of us, like me, that have been activists since we came out at a very young age, the notion of not being discriminated against at work for being gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender is a huge victory for human rights. And human rights is something that many of us around this table, and I'm sure out there in the audience as well, and out there at home, if there's anybody listening, recognize as a viable goal for all of us today. It makes a segue for me, but I just want to say that part of what made me sad was, you know, we talked a long time and we had a big panel about living wage, and we argued about it and we did the best we could, which was to devote $100,000 to it in next year's budget. Okay, is it called ironic when you think about the folks that, you know, I go sometimes to some of the local facilities with my tradespeople brothers and sisters, and we talk to people because getting a good job with good wages that has good benefits is a key to getting out of poverty. It certainly was for me and has been for a lot of people, and it's a way of allowing people to make a contribution to their community. So it's huge. And Frank has talked in the past about how important it is to have ways of getting training. Job training is something that many people that are against the jail expansion would certainly agree is a viable part of any alternatives to incarceration program. And that's something that, again, if we could figure out a way to pay living wage, it would go hand in hand, I think, with reducing our jail population. That's just me. I have to say that I'm so glad you're here. Part of me wants to bite my tongue and not say, where have you been? Because I know a lot of y'all are really mad because you just heard about this. Some of us are in here slugging away every day, and as a person of color and for other reasons, you know, some of us get marginalized because we stand up and we show up and we speak up. And I'm not going to say this decision, because what I want y'all to know is it's an iterative situation. I know that from when we fought this before. The fact is there are good reasons to do this, and Brian has outlined a bunch of them. There's a way that those who have spoken that have spent time incarcerated understand that it's not humane to have people locked up at all, but it's also not humane to have people overcrowded. So there's a way that in a community like ours, we've got to think about that, and I want you all to know this, and if I sound defensive, it's because I have to have an open mind. Especially as a person of color, if I don't want to be marginalized and seen as being against something, I'm not going to be at the table. I was at the table the last time we did this, and I had a say in how it turned out. And I'm proud that we got as far as we did, which was preventing an expansion. But we had to have you. We had to have you here. We had to have professionals with data and statistics and who are influential and who are professionals who are thought well of, and you've written papers and you've been to school, and you come and you school us on it. Because if I stand up here and say my nephews and my cousins in Texas they're arrested, almost all of the males are arrested for driving while Latino. They start out in prison and they go on in prison, and it goes on for generations, and we don't feel inferior. We just have a bar ahead of us that we try our damnedest to jump over. And as much as y'all might have good intentions, you know, y'all can't be everywhere. And in Texas, you know, it's bad. It's bad for Latinos. It's bad for blacks, too. We'd like to think it's better here, and it can be better here. But we need y'all to show up and speak up and to stand up. And the fact is, I got to look at my notes here. Yes, I voted yes. And I'll tell y'all, the people that were here know. I asked a lot of questions, and I assessed the situation. I'm elected to public office, and I got to figure out how to get myself at the table in these things. And, of course, this is ruining my whole strategy, but those of y'all that know me knew what I was doing anyway. I voted yes because I want to be at the table when we talk about this. And if I had voted no, I would be excluded as too emotional, which is what happens a lot of times when you're a passionate Latino, a mercurial Latino, a person who speaks out about their personal experiences. Those of y'all that have the data, come to us. Come to us because it will hold some water. It will convince people. And look, we've got a group here. This is Tompkins County, where many of us consider ourselves to be progressives and liberals. We've got a fiscal responsibility. We've got people that can't afford to stay in their homes, not just seniors and people on fixed incomes, young families that can't afford to pay the increased taxes. And when something comes up like this, we've got to show that we did an assessment of, okay, this is what's going to cost us over so many years, so and so much a year, and this is what they're threatening us with, and so this is what we've got to say we're willing to do and see what happens. I swear to you. Now, personally, I tried to fight the expansion of the legislative chambers. The state was not going to not let that happen. We've stood up to the state with pushback. We've stood up to the state. And those times with fracking and with pushback and with this resistance to the jail, we had support from the community. We had support from coalitions of people of color. We had coalitions from both universities, all the institutions of higher learning. We had people come in and speak from other communities. We had all that and more because it may look like it happened really fast to y'all. But, you know, I started posting about this on the Fall Creek listserv as soon as it came to our committees and we started talking about it. And nothing. Okay, you know, I can, as much as I can, try and rile people up about stuff, but we have to pick our battles. And if people aren't going to get excited enough about living wage to make us do a living wage, we're not going to do it. Y'all are going to get excited about this. You already are. You're going to have to hold our feet to the fire. I'm going to say, and I know my colleagues around the table might not like this, but I'm going to say, don't shoot the messenger, and that means any of us that talk about this decision, because we're required to make decisions based on more than, how can I say this, just our gut. Although I love my gut, and it mostly is right, I got to have data to back it up. And that's what we did, and that's, I'm guessing, why 90% of the people sitting around this table did it, because we needed to draw your attention to the fact that what we've got is an unsustainable situation with board outs. If you're willing to stand up, speak up, and show up, and say that this is not your community value, you don't want this, it helps us a lot. We can win this with your help, and if you're constant. I know a lot of people around here are cringing that I even say that and frowning, but the fact is we need to figure out how to make the jail more humane because it is overcrowded, and there are people that come back again and again and again, and we try with ATI, and we try with a lot of our programs to figure out ways to break the cycle, and we do a fairly good job, but it's not good enough yet. And for the people that end up having to live there, what are we going to do? I know OAR does a tremendous job, and as I tried to show some of y'all on the emails that I sent out with the resolutions, the past couple of years anyway, we've had to increase the amount that goes to ATI because they've had increased need. And it pays back what we give to it as a county and as taxpayers. It saves so much money. Where's the capacity balance on that? We don't know. Somebody said $900,000 to ATI. I would like to hear some argument about that because I'm guessing that the argument would be given is that ATI will need more resources to have the capacity to handle that. It's something worth thinking about. All the things y'all brought off are worth thinking about and talking about. And without you, I wouldn't be able to stand here right now and say we can win this, but we need you.
Before I go,
actually, I sat here, but you know what I mean.
Before I go to Peter,
Nate, can I ask you a favor? I just tried on my phone to figure out the prison, the jail population in Chautauqua County, which I know is way higher than ours, but I couldn't find it. Maybe you can and have that for Joe. Do you know it?
Well, I've got an old benchmark that I did when I first came here. It's still, so it's 5 years old, probably. In terms of incarcerated individuals per thousand of population, back then at least, we were fourth from the bottom. So of the 57 counties in the state, we were 54th. So we were third from the bottom. So only below us, Rockland, Saratoga, and Hamilton had a lower incarcerated population per capita than we did at that time. We're a little less than the state average at that time was 1.42 per 1,000 of population. We at that time were at 0.86.
0.86.
Right.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you, Joe. Peter, Frank, Pam, Dooley, Carol.
Hey, Martha, would it be okay if I went over there and used that microphone? I'd like to look at the people
sure.
I want to talk to.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Yeah, I'd like to respond to what you said. I agree with everything that Brian said, and he addressed many of your points you made. But I'd like to tell you something about my background a little bit and why it is that I strongly support this expansion of the jail. In the first place, I agree with everything you said about the unbelievable number of people who are incarcerated in the United States compared to any place else in the developed world. I think it's a national disgrace. I don't know what to do about it, but I think it's a national disgrace. Furthermore, I also believe that the system that we have in our government about putting people in jail who have not been convicted of a crime is also a disgrace. I don't believe that anybody ought to be in a jail who hasn't been convicted. On the other hand, neither of those things are something that the county legislature has anything to say about. We have a simple role to play in this. It's a role that's mandated by the state, and it has severe limitations, but some opportunities. So basically, What is it that we can, why do we have this role? What happens when a person is accused of committing crime is they come before a judge. A judge is not someone who we appoint. A judge is elected by you, the judge that they come before. And that judge makes the decision. The decision can be several things. If he thinks there's a likelihood that those people will either commit another crime or have committed a crime or are apt to flee, then he will give us, the county, an order to incarcerate that person. There's nothing we can do about that. Whether we have a room in the jail or we don't have room in the jail, we absolutely must send that person to jail, no matter how much we may feel it's unfair and unreasonable. That's our obligation. And there are many cases where we are obliged to do things that we do not agree with. But nonetheless, that's the system that we live in. Now, with regard to when do they go to jail? In general, for a crime which is not serious, where the person does not present a danger to the community, that person is given bail and released from jail if they can pay the bail. Now, as Brian said, and I think others have said, we have an extensive program here called the OTR, what is it?
OAR,
thank you. The OAR program that provides a bail fund. It's true that there is a limitation on the bail that can be provided. About several years ago, 2 years ago, when I had the job that Brian has now, I looked into the fact how many people are in jail because the bail that was assessed is higher than the maximum that OAR could pay. It turned out there was no one. It turned out that was that, in fact, the bail that we were able to pay was enough to pay bail for the people that OAR believed should be bailed out. Did I make that clear? And that raising the amount of money that OAR could pay for bail would not increase the number of people who are on bail. For instance, what happens sometimes is a person has committed a very serious crime, and they're given a very high bail, like $10,000, because there's a concern that they'll run away if they don't have that much money involved in it. That case would already be a case where there was something, a serious crime that had been committed, that perhaps it's reasonable that the person should stay in jail because of the risk of flight. So I do not believe that raising the limit of OAR, have seen no evidence that raising the limit of OAR bails that they can give out would in fact reduce the number of people in incarceration. So why is it these people are incarcerated? Well, because the police have considered have accused them of a crime, and a judge has ruled that they go to jail. Now, in my experience, people do not go to jail awaiting trial for peeing in the commons or smoking a joint, a single joint. That's simply, I can't argue with you, but when I was on this job and I looked to understand what kinds of things people were jailed for in Tompkins County, not in the country, it was clear to me that when people were in jail for reasons that had committed what I would call non-dangerous crimes. That's what I saw when I looked at the data. It was a year and a half ago. Maybe it's changed since then, but that's what I saw. Therefore, the question is, why in the world, if I feel the way I did I say this was a good idea to expand the jail? Because I see no evidence where expanding the jail will incarcerate more people than are incarcerated at the moment. It will only shift them from Elmira or wherever it is we board people out back into Ithaca. That's all it's going to do. And it's really just a matter of saving money for the county and also giving a person who the judge has decided should be in jail a closer contact with his or her family and his or her community and the services that we provide. Therefore, when I think about this very carefully, I can see no good reason for not expanding our jail, and several good reasons for doing so. And I do that with full sympathy and agreement with 90% of what I have heard you say over there. I'm on the same side as you are.
We need some quiet, please. Thank you. Frank, Pam, Dooley, Carol.
Thanks, Martha. Before I address a few of the points regarding what has become the topic under privilege of the floor, I want to digress for one moment and just remind you that Monday is Veterans Day. County is closed. A lot of government offices are closed. I know Ithaca College is having quite a few recognitions. Anthony Hobson has been very supportive of putting those on. And there is a ceremony at DeWitt Park, 11 o'clock, if any of you would like to come. I also want to thank those of you that were able to make the Veterans Day parade on Sunday. Some of us took a break from campaigning to attend that. And I saw Mike Lane in his spot by the reviewing stand. Yes, your spot by the reviewing stand. I wanted to make sure that you were thanked for doing that. And I apologize. We were marching, so I may not have seen anybody else. The issue that we've been talking about, I want to make a few comments about them. I understood what Peter was describing, and I heard someone mention earlier this evening that people are incarcerated for non-serious crimes. I don't think any one of us wants to see somebody incarcerated for something that they don't have to be. It's not up to this legislature, and I think Brian said it, and it's not even up to the police. It's up to the magistrates who send people to jail. We don't control that branch of government, whether it's town government or state level. And that's an issue that perhaps there is a county magistrates association, some of you probably know that does have meetings, and you're certainly permitted to go and attend those. The issue that when I was on the Public Safety Committee not too many years ago, we did a review of what constituted various crimes. And I was quite surprised to find out that in the category, you know, maybe this has changed, let me say that, but in the category of serious crimes or not, I'm sorry, non-serious crimes, there was child and sexual abuse and domestic violence, which blew me out of the water. I couldn't believe that those were categorized as non-serious crimes, because some of us do believe that they are. Now, this may not be popular, but in my opinion, and I think Peter began to say this, there are some people who deserve to be incarcerated. I mean, with all due respect, not everyone wants to be attacked with a knife or whatever, and if there's a serious crime, those people do deserve, if the magistrate or the judge determines that they're a threat to society, they probably deserve to spend some time there, but I think the bail fund does try to accommodate the numbers that Brian and Peter were describing. We've had that OAR bail fund for most of the 29 years I've been on this board, and we do suffer once in a while because somebody takes off, and we end up having to fund the amount of money that's on there that constitutes that. So, I mean, having said that, I want to address, I want to give you guys a challenge in addition to why you've come here tonight, and shift this just a little bit. Someone mentioned, and Brian began to address it, I chair the Health and Human Services Committee, and a couple of meetings back, we passed a resolution that came out of that committee. This body passed a resolution that came out of that committee regarding the state's flawed decision to pursue closing the psych centers, particularly the one in Elmira and the one in Binghamton, Broome County Psych Center and the Elmira Psych Center. It's a serious concern, and it affects the hospital, which has 26 spaces, 20 adult, 6 children. And if you want to also understand what the pressure is on families, if you have someone that, first of all, you have to find a spot in the psych center and before you can actually have a bed there. If you have to send families to Albany, Utica, Buffalo, and wherever else along the Thruway corridor, which is where the state is moving, the state wants to move to, the impact on our local area, and particularly in Tompkins County, is severe. And you're absolutely right. I can't remember the gentleman's name who mentioned the, I think it's that fellow sitting in the back with the red under his collar. Yeah, you just look the other way. The concern about who's sitting in the jail that doesn't belong there because they belong in a hospital setting and one of the psych centers. I would challenge you to get a hold of your state representatives and let them know that they need to make an effort to keep those psych centers open, because the impact on Tompkins County is going to be severe. The impact on the southern tier is going to be even more severe because it would leave us in the entire southern tier, without a psych center. And that is not right. I don't think I didn't write on the back of an envelope, as Brian did, all my notes, but I do want to make sure that you understand it's time to probably review the decision. This was not a snap decision about discussing the joint. It's been on our plate for a long time because of the types of things that were already described in sending people out of town. The board outs are immense, and we do have a number of alternatives to incarceration programs. This county is quite generous in supporting those programs and providing through probation those programs. I don't want to get Brian in hot water or set up his committee, but if you want to attend the Public Safety Committee, I'm sure Brian would be glad to tell you when those meetings take place, because it's my understanding that at a lot of those meetings, the discussion on alternatives does come up. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Pam?
Oh, Martha, wait.
Sorry, Pam.
There's one more item, and it goes back to what Mr. McPherson was talking about, the living wage. Stanley, you're still here. Stanley mentioned that he had been furloughed, for lack of a better word. You've been let go in your hiring at the recycling center. Is there, now, this is not on the jail or anything like that. Is there any way for us to get any information on the status of that? Maybe not tonight, but who would be the appropriate person to let us know about that?
Probably through me.
Okay. Not tonight, but just get it on the menu. Thanks. Thanks, Martha.
Okay, Pam.
Well, thank you, everybody, for coming here tonight. I think it's incredibly important that you come and speak. I couldn't agree with you more about what has happened in our country with our prison system, our privatization. We fell in love with privatization in this country, and the people whose interests are being served by that are not everyday people. They're people who are who have a financial interest in seeing people put in jail. And we have the same problem, of course, we've had with our health care system, among many other issues. So I'm with you on that. And I have to say, though, that when I first got on the county legislature, I made it a point to go and look at all of sort of our facilities, trying to understand my job. And I went to the jail, and I took a tour of the jail. And I came away from there just basically horrified at what I had seen, not because Tompkins County Jail was, I expect, any worse. It's probably a lot better than a lot of other jails. But because of course, we pride ourselves in being a progressive community, that we tend to reach out and take care of people. But I had a very visceral reaction to that jail. And I never said anything publicly because I feel like I wanted to be responsible about this. I wanted to understand it. And it was when this overcrowding that I saw, a lack of a facility, compounded by the fact that we were sending people out of county to other facilities, which I didn't have any faith were better or as good as what we had, and certainly didn't have the services that Tompkins County has. And these people didn't have access to their families and to the support network that they needed. So those elements entered into my decision to support this. And I actually didn't see it as an expansion of the jail. I mean, the footprint of the jail is exactly the same. They're reusing space, and the recreation area outside, I thought it was, there's going to be basketball hoops out there, there's going to be a place for people to move around out there, and I I thought that was a good thing. I haven't thought of it as an expansion because we were basically keeping people here. That we weren't having, we didn't have empty beds sitting there waiting for our, you know, our judicial system to fill. We had created beds where we could bring people back to Tompkins County who were being sent out of the county away from their support network. And I think that perhaps we, you know, I really don't know about the degree to which the people who are incarcerated in Tompkins County, how many of them are nonviolent, who are not bailed out. I know that this legislature has been a supporter of OAR, and I think OAR does a terrific job, and we should really support them a lot, and our alternatives to incarceration. So I think those things are strong. Perhaps they could be better. But I resisted saying an expansion of the jail because I have not felt that. So that's where I'm coming from on this. I think that we all need to work at this more. I think that we need to change a lot of things in our county, in our country, and I certainly hope that we can continue this conversation, we can try and make it more understandable and more acceptable to the community.
Do we, Carol, Les, Nathan, then Leslin?
I cannot add to this additional item tonight. Anything that hasn't been covered by Brian very well, and Joe and Frank's comments and Pam's comments just now, our country has a major problem. I'm glad other residents are as concerned about that. What I wanted to talk about under privilege of the floor is a continuing attempt that we all make to keep residents informed about times and places when they can have input on decisions that are being made. So I wanted to mention that tonight. The Ithaca-Tompkins County Transportation Council is seeking public input on what will be a 20-year transportation plan for the county. And the first in a series of meetings is going to take place on Wednesday, November 20th at 6:30 p.m. at the Tompkins County Public Library. It'll deal with all the kinds of transportation we have in the county, traffic circulation, bicycle transportation, pedestrian safety, infrastructure, trail development, and all of those decisions will have tremendous impact on our climate change concerns. So it's a meeting that I hope many people will go to and consider giving their input. Thanks.
Julie, would you repeat the date and time?
Wednesday, November 20th, 6:30 at the County Library. It's the first in a series, but it's always good to get there on the ground floor.
Carol, Nathan, Leslin, and Mike.
Oh, gosh. Well, thank you all for coming. I'm not going to continue giving a rationale. I agree with a lot of what my colleagues have said, other than just to say that, you know, I have been and I will be with you on the bus. Wherever you go at state and federal levels to help fight the insane policies that have brought our nation to the point we're at. I think it's really important. I think we need to find solutions. I will say I think we need to find solutions that really continue to maintain the separation of powers that are a sort of a standard of democracy that need to be fully restored. You know, the separation of the administrative or executive, judicial, and legislative branches, so that you know who is in jail is separated from the policies that decide what are crimes from those who are charged with making the arrests. Those should stay separate. So that needs to be in the mix. What brought me to the decision to vote for this was that I truly believed we had reached the end of the line in heading off the larger project, that the state wasn't going to bear with us any longer. In addition to some of the other things that were said here, the ability to achieve some of the larger outdoor space for the one measly hour a day that people are allowed outside, and then that some of that space, half of that, would be covered outdoor space in our harsh climate was something that made a difference for me. I would like nothing better than to see a half-empty jail that, you know, then a year from now that you came back here and said, we now don't need any of that, and let's turn that extra space that we then have and actually use the room we've got set aside and make it a library and make it a classroom and put more computers for people to use to truly figure out and learn how to turn lives around for those who you know, at the moment, for really serious reasons, can't be on the streets. So that's all I'm going to say about that. I do hope that you'll stick with us, that there, of course, there are things we can do locally to figure out even better ways to help people stay out of jail, to increase our alternatives to incarceration programs, and to think about what are our enforcement policies and what discretion is there locally in any of those three branches of government to help impact that. And so please stick with us and help us find those places where we can impact it that don't bump up against what we can't do. And then I just, on another whole other topic, speaking of buses, I want to thank some of you, I believe, went to Albany on other matters related to gas build-out. And I want to thank you for going. There's going to be other opportunities, even next week, another bus back to Albany related to gas build-out. So thank you, and if anybody wants to know more about that, see me. And I want to mention that on the LNG storage issue, there are new laws being, rules being proposed by New York State. We talked about them related to the storage of liquefied natural gas. We talked about them Monday's Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, and because of the timing of that, you won't see it on the agenda tonight, a resolution about liquid natural gas is going to come to us on November 19th for those who are interested. At this point, what we're doing is we're going to just be asking for more time for local level government and those who are interested to learn more about this. And rather than bring it to tonight's agenda following the peak meeting, I wanted to leave more time for our planning department to weigh in on anything they had to say about environmental quality, our health department on environmental health, and our public safety, our emergency communications people, about any concerns, and I think there are some serious concerns about what these new rules would do in terms of asking our emergency personnel to be exposed to material at -285 degrees Fahrenheit or whatever it is. It's just we're not equipped for that. We need equipment, we need training, and they haven't even heard anything about it. So there ought to be time for them to weigh in, and I don't know if there'll be time for them to provide substance in time to make that a substantive resolution by the 19th, but at least to be weighing in for more time. So please come back and hear more about that. Thanks very much.
Nathan, Leslin, and Mike.
All right, so first I'm going to answer your question, Martha, that you had before, and then secondly, speak to the issue, and I will repeat points, but I want to do it in a concise way. So the first point is that in Chautauqua County, which is about 30% larger than we are, They operate anywhere from 240 to 280 patients, and they've hit highs of, I mean, not patients, I'm sorry. I work in a hospital, so it's okay. I say patients all the time. Inmates. And then and they go up as high as about 308. And so they have to board out everything over that 240, which is pretty substantial. So what are we talking, basically like three times as much, two and a half to three times as many people incarcerated for only 30% more of the population. All right.
Thank you.
So in terms of what the county can do, so the county, we when it comes to people that are arrested and then sentenced to something, we can only do two things, really. We can provide the jail space that that we have to do when a judge orders it, or we can provide the different types of alternatives to incarceration if a judge decides that. And so that's exactly what we do. And we have absolutely invested in the alternatives to incarcerations. I think we could do more, but I think we've invested more than most communities have by quite a lot. When it comes to the jails, when a judge decides to send a person to jail, we have to provide the space. And if we can't provide the space here, then we have to send them to a jail far away, which is also not good for that that person that's incarcerated as well. And so really, when it gets to that point, we're not left with very many options. And so, you know, really, I think if you want to get to the partial route to the problem, you have to really talk to the and make sure that you get judges that are elected that are favorable towards alternatives to incarceration, that you get district attorneys that also, you know, are, and I think our judges and our district attorney are favorable towards that, but, you know, they could always use more education. Now, what you really want to go to the root of the problem, well, the root of the problem, too, are more social problems that exist. And Tompkins County is absolutely invested in trying to find those roots of the problem and address it. And that's why we invest several times more than the average in New York State when it comes to youth services programs. Just recently in this budget, you know, we reinstated funding for Big Brothers, Big Sisters program. You know, when you look at actually the combined county and city of Ithaca spending that we do on youth services, it is leaps and bounds more than most, actually all the cities in New York State. And so I think that, you know, this legislature, we are addressing it in a progressive way. Obviously, the jail expansion, you know, I don't like it. I don't know what else we can do right now unless we get to the root issues. But I know that, you know, we've, as Brian has said, we have fought this multiple times. I think I am. And so, you know, we have actually fought the state successfully in the past. And so, you know, and we have tried doing that, and they've made some compromises. Obviously, it's not good enough.
All right, Leslin.
Thank you. I certainly don't want to repeat what people say, but I want to start it by just saying a personal thank you to all of you, my colleagues around the table, for your kind support over this last month as I dealt with the passing of my mother, who has been my proudest supporter, my best friend, and it's very hard, and I will miss her dearly. And so thank you for excusing me from some of the meetings, from just being present. I'm still dealing with a lot of it, you know, when someone dies, when you're the responsible person, sometimes it's hard to even take your own time to mourn because business has to happen. You know, the funeral director wants to know where you're going to bury her and when and how and how much money and what casket you want. And so you're immersed in everything business and don't even have time for your own, dealing with your own emotions around this. So I do appreciate your kind support, all of you, and to everyone else out there in the public who also have been very supportive of me as I continue to deal with the loss of my mother. To the topic tonight, I'm not going to lecture the people sitting out here because I know these folks are fairly intelligent and understand what the whole situation with jail and so on is about. But I want to appreciate those who stood up and recognize that this has been a body that did not just roll over and do what a commission of corrections has been telling us to do for years. I pulled out my Tompkins County Public Safety Building Program Needs Assessment from 2002. I've been holding on to it. I used to chair the Public Safety Committee as well, and was remembering when we were told that we needed to have 196 beds by the Commission of Correction. This is not a body that takes this very lightly, and I don't want anyone to walk out of here thinking that this body has taken it lightly. And we battled, and we went back and forth, and we came down to 150, and we went back and forth, and we came down to 111, and we still said no. It was just plain old expansion. We weren't going to do that. We weren't just going to add a new wing to the jail, you know, so we can house more people. We weren't just going to do that. I came onto this body when the whole ATI program was supposed to be, much of it was supposed to be for a short period of time, a trial, and there was pushback. We had some different people sitting on this legislature who continued to question year after year as we funded it. Well, the way we thought it was just going to be for a short time, why are we continuing to do this? And we as a body said, no, this is important. We are not about just putting people in jail. We're about helping people to receive the services. We're about helping people to stay in the community so they can continue their jobs, keep their homes, stay with their families, do all the things as best we can. This is a body that has done that. Again, I'm saying it because I don't want folks to walk out of here thinking that we are just flip about, let's just do this. We are a body that has taken very seriously the fact that over a number of years, we have been taking the folks who have been committed to our custody, the custody of the Sheriff's Department, 7 to 10 of them, and sending them someplace else, and recognizing that those folks are not being afforded what we offer in this county in terms of services, the ability to meet with OAR, to talk to OAR, etc. I worked for OAR when I came to Tompkins County. I know what it was like to get into the jail and bail people out at all hours of the night. Is it Lieutenant Bunk? Okay, is here. He knows me. I was there all hours doing that. But I also know that OAR has its own criteria, and many of the people who are there, not just the fiscal threshold, it's beyond the fiscal threshold. Okay. There are many other levels to their criteria of who they will and will not bail out and or cannot bail out. And so there needs to be a place for those folks. I have had my own experiences with my own relatives who love, for some strange reason, to be at the jail. I'd rather they not be there. And I want them here, not someplace else. If they're going to be locked up, I want them here, not someplace else where they don't have access to me or others. So it took us quite a while going back and forth on this, and with the Commission of Corrections sitting over our shoulders saying, what are you going to do? We're supposed to be at 196 beds right now, according to the Commission of Corrections. We're not going there. We are not, at that time I was looking for my financial pages, we were talking about a $20 million project, at least, to expand our jail. No, we're not doing that. And we pushed, and we fought, and with many of you, we fought, and we got threats, and we had our variances pulled, and we ended up spending large amounts of money. Because when the commission pulled its variance, we had to board out so many more people, which is not fair to those folks. I was reading the white paper that was provided to us. We have one of the best assigned counsel programs. We don't have public defenders. Mm-hmm. We have assigned counsel. programs. And when we send people away, they don't have their access to their attorneys. I don't like that. I didn't take this decision very lightly by any means. Most any of you sitting out there who knows me know very well that I think very carefully when it comes to social justice issues. And when I vote for something, it's because I think that that's the right thing to do. I appreciate, once again, you all recognizing that this is not a body that has just said over years, oh, let's just do what the commission says. Ooh, we can't do anything else. No, we have fought back. I tried to figure out how I can get on the doggone commission on corrections. So how can I be appointed to be one of the commissioners? I also feel with this project, something that has been missing for years, and I am thankful to be able to spend this money, that those folks who are unfortunately in jail have a decent recreation space, outdoors. Most of this is going towards that. I was questioning, do we really have to spend that much money on some bricks? You know, on some concrete, on some piping and all those things, like, yeah. But I think that it's very important. It's a decent rec space. We haven't had one. We haven't had a decent recreation space. And folks shouldn't just be locked up and cooped up in one little space trying to have some recreation. Okay? Did not. The bulk of this is being spent on that. I didn't think it cost that much, but they're telling me it does. And they showed me the numbers. And so I was okay. And this decision I came by comfortably saying, I want to keep my folks here. I am not willing to spend $20 million to add a whole wing to the jail. I want to keep my women here. I want to keep my juveniles here. I want to keep our men folk here. Matter of fact, I'd rather they not be in jail. And we invest in our alternatives incarceration program. We don't take it lightly. OAR has come to us just about every year and said, we need some more money for our bail fund. Our community does not put the kind of money it should be putting into OAR's bail fund. I ask people every year, when you do your United Way pledge or whatever it is, send some money to OAR. Put it in the bail fund because they could use it in the bail fund. We don't get that much from the community investment. This body puts money into it because we recognize that it is important that we support OAR in doing its job in getting people who are pre-sentenced, who haven't been convicted of anything, out of the jail if they can. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. And I've really been waiting. I really have a lot to say on this, so I hope people wait.
I'll be very, very brief.
Let me just say real quickly, Michael, that I think we're supposed to be at somewhere like in the year 2020, 245 beds, according to the Commission on Corrections and their understanding of our statistics of how our inmates' population is going. And we're saying, no, that's not how it goes.
Right. I'll try to be brief, and I just would associate myself with what Pam said. I agree with those comments, and I agree with almost everything that Leslin has said as well. And Leslin, you made the point, which I hadn't heard before, which is so important, that so often it is the women who are boarded out because it costs so much for us to do the various classifications and the guarding of the women locally. It becomes, sadly, cost-effective to have them taken somewhere else. And that is separated from their families. And I think that's a bad thing to have happen. I've spoken about that even back to 2002, Leslin. And so hopefully whether this will alleviate it, I don't know. It'll help. But we got to do something so that we don't have those variances yanked from us again, which will then turn us back into the downward spiral of spending more and more and more on jail board outs and putting more and more out of county, like Leslin said. On a lighter note, I just want to mention tomorrow night, the Civil War Commission will be in Groton. And we hope they will, that folks will come to the Groton Library at 7 p.m. and hear the Language of War, which will be performed by the commission itself. And it's a nice program about what was people were thinking about and writing about locally during the Civil War. Thank you.
All right, I'm going to jump in here. I think it's clear that this community cares about these incarceration issues. I think it should be clear that this legislature cares deeply. I've been on this board 12 years. I don't think there's anything that we have studied more thoroughly than this issue. I'm not sure there's anything we've invested in more thoroughly than this issue. I will tell you, when before Peter was on the legislature, he and I were on a different committee, and we looked at statistics from the state of how much different counties spent on incarceration and probation and courts, local courts. We were the lowest in spending in incarceration and probably among the highest in spending in probation. Probation meaning all the alternatives programs that we're talking about. I remember not a few years ago when we had real deep fiscal problems and we had had to face some serious choices about what programs to cut and what to save. And our probation director, 2 years in a row, came to us and said, well, if I'm going to meet my budget guidelines, I have to cut day reporting entirely. We have to eliminate this program. We said, no. We said, we're going to put extra money into it. We'll trim it back from ending at 3 o'clock to 1 o'clock, whatever it was. We're going to make it a little more affordable. But we said, no, we need to keep that program. And as Brian mentioned, we're expanding the Human Services Building so that it can have a dignified, respectful, permanent home within one of the modern buildings that Tompkins County owns, instead of in the so-called temporary location it's been in for 12 years. Frank is exactly right about the closures of the Elmira and Binghamton psychiatric centers, and if you have extra energy for advocacy, I would urge you to find out. Donna Lopardo is the assemblywoman in Broome County. She's spearheading it. I'm not sure which must be the mental health committee in the within the assembly. And this is a decision that's pending right now. You can have, if citizens weigh in on trying to keep those facilities open, that will absolutely help with the folks who really need care instead of incarceration. I will give you another tip. To be a magistrate, you do not have to be an attorney. You just have to run. So check out your, now not in city court, but check out, if you live in one of the rural towns, check out online, Board of Elections, find out when those terms are up, and run for magistrate. We do not have a stop and frisk program here. That's New York City. The statistics that are in here from 2008, Brian, the committee gets statistics, right, from jail population?
Race here right now, he can give you one right this instant. Yes, monthly.
Right. So, and those are online on our website. You know, the whole packet that the committee gets is available to the public online, so you can look through that. And if questions aren't clear in the statistics that are there, call our staff, and we call the sheriff or call Michelle, who staffs that committee here in the clerk's office. And you can get help figuring out what are the questions you have where the statistics might help you. And Leslie was right, the jail expansion that we were considering 8 years ago or so, $20 million, and not just to add on a few beds. It was going to rebuild the whole jail, basically. And we know from most other counties in the state were under the same kind of pressure from the Commission of Corrections, and most of them buckled under and did it. And guess what? The state closed their prisons because they could shift their people to the county jail. So we said, as I said, we said no.
people around the state said, whoa, oh, my God, they said no. What's going to happen? Well, you know, they pulled the variances. We paid the extra for board outs for several years. And then the commissioner changed. The chief of the commission changed. And then the current commissioner, Tom Beilein, had a whole different attitude about it. And he's been working with us collaboratively because we have a safe facility, because people are taken care of. He's been very patient, and you know, the staff has done a great job. But as Brian also said, they do want to make sure that we're watching this and paying attention, and even boarding out an average of 7 people is too many. So this is a very, very modest not even expansion. It's not an expansion. It's a renovation. It's within the current footprint. And just one other thing I want to say. It's reasonable for you folks to say, golly, how come we didn't know about this? When I started on this legislature, the Ithaca Journal and WHCU used to send reporters to every one of our committee meetings. They're not even here tonight. They used to report on every committee meeting that we had. They don't even come to the legislature anymore. Maybe write a letter to the Ithaca Journal and say, public can't find out what's going on. Marsha Lynch sends out. Marsha Lynch ought to be paid by the Ithaca Journal, folks. She sends out a report from every single committee meeting, every single legislature meeting. We might end up here till 11 o'clock at night. She goes over to her office and types out a press release before she goes home. Are you going to see a report about those committee meetings, even though we hand them the information? Yeah. So it only shows up maybe in the article that they where they summarize everything we've done on the budget committee. So it's really a shame that the public's not informed. It's not for our lack of trying. But we're glad you're here. We're really glad you care about this. I think you can see that we care about it too. So I have a little bit more of a report, but I want to ask if there's any other legislative privilege before I switch topics. Pat.
The only other thing that I would add to what's been said, and I want to thank all of my colleagues for being so articulate in their answers to this, to these issues that have been raised tonight, but I also want to thank those of you that have come from the public to talk to us about it, because it is a very serious question, and I'm glad it's being taken seriously. I know it was taken seriously here at the legislature, and I'm very glad to hear that it was taken seriously by the public, too. That's good. The only other thing I would point out is that we have just finished updating our county website, and there is a ream of information on the county website that people may not think to go there and look to find out what's happening, but it's now, I think, very searchable, very user-friendly in the sense of finding out about what's going on, and if there's whether it's a particular issue or a particular committee, try checking it out on the website to follow what's happening, because the new website especially is I think, much easier to use than our old one was.
Thank you, Pat. Anyone else? All right, I just have to make a few other comments under my report, and then I would like us to do the consent agenda so staff can go, and then we will take a recess and then get back to where we were supposed to be. We're here on a Thursday night because of Tuesday night, because of the election Tuesday. And we switch every year, every election year. Well, every year there's an election, and we switch to Thursday night. This is a real turning of the page. It happens for our members every 4 years that we see turnover. We see people leave voluntarily. We see people change seats involuntarily, and it's I think one of the things I like best about this body is that we have friendships here that have nothing to do with party affiliation. You know, we work hard, we argue, we agree, we disagree, and in the end, we, you know, we form relationships that go on and outside this body. So it's going to be with some very deep regrets, I think, that we will have three of our members change over, you know, leave us this year. Pam McAsee, for her deep service, you know, terrific service in two terms on the legislature and many, many years on the county, on the city, Common Council. Pat Pryor, 4 years on the legislature in which you packed more work than many of us who've been here longer than you, and we are deeply grateful. And Frank, you did have to correct the Ithaca Journal. That fact they didn't get right. You were running for your ninth term. Is that right? You've completed eight terms. Well, you've finished out somebody's term first. So this is your 29th year on this body. Is that right? We're 12. Hey. Frank, we don't believe that. So I don't think we can appropriately say, Frank, what we're going to miss. I do know there's going to be a fight for that seat. Anyway, we will have an appropriate celebration of your service, the three of you, in December. Welcome all ideas about how we might do that. It's a real important moment. And I just want to thank you all, the three of you. I want to thank everybody for continuing to serve, and thank the candidates who ran, who aren't here, those who won and didn't win. It's obviously a very important part of our democracy that we have contested races. I'm proud that we do have contested races for these positions. And it means that people think it's worth doing, that this job is important, and that it's interesting and valuable to the community. So it's really much more will be said, but I just didn't want to let tonight go by without talking about Tuesday night. So thank you all. With that, I'd like to go through the consent agenda. So the staff who never thought they'd hear so much public privilege and legislative privilege, that it's 20 of 8. But if there's anything to be pulled, please let us know. Resolution A, ID 4432, return school taxes. Resolution B, ID 4431, return village taxes. Resolution C, ID 4429, adoption of regular and supplemental reports of footings, totals, and assessment rolls. Resolution D, ID 4430, establishing county equalization rates. Resolution E, ID 4433, adoption of apportionment of taxes for 2014. Resolution F, the revised version in your packet. ID 4456, scheduling a public hearing for the 2013 New York State Housing Trust Fund, Office of Community Renewal, Community Development Block Grant Program application. Is there a motion on the consent agenda? This would have to be Frank. Frank seconded by Pat. All in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. Let us be back in our
Martha,
seats.
Wait, before you do, just because I seen that Megan McDonald showed up from the planning department and sat through all of this. So rather than wait for my report, if people know they're going to have any questions about that, ask them now while she's still here, please, so that I don't have to answer them.
You mean the item that was on the consent agenda?
The item that was on the consent agenda, if people have any questions about
the application that she will be writing after she hears from people. What? No, it was not polled.
Not polled.
But if they have any questions, we've passed
okay.
it.
Okay. Are there any questions for Megan? She's there. We're going to have a recess for 15 minutes. Find Megan if you have a question. All right. We'll be back in our seats, please, at 5 of 8. Thank you.